Hey, welcome to Hope City's podcast. We're so excited that you chose to listen to us, and we hope you enjoy today's message.
I get to finish up our counterculture series this morning, and it's been a good one. We have been in this section. It's been Matthew chapter 10. It has been our counterculture series, and it's been a challenging one. The context for this passage of scripture has been Jesus releasing the disciples to do ministry, and as he sends them out, he prepares them for what they're getting ready to walk into. How many of you have ever felt like you're getting prepared to walk into something and you can just feel it? Like, this is going to be big. This is going to be hard. This is going to be challenging. You can feel that you're walking into something that is going to be hard. And in this preparation speech that Jesus is giving, he has both immediate and prophetic tones. Overall, the message that he's giving is not butterflies and rainbows. It's hard, and it's tough, and it's a lot to swallow. Jesus made points to say, get ready, because yes, I'm releasing you out into ministry, but no, that they're going to betray you. They're going to mock you. They're going to doubt you. Fights are going to break out. Loyalties are going to be crossed. But do not be afraid. And that's the message that Jesus interwove into this entire passage of scripture, is this tone of like, yes, it's going to be hard. Yes, it's going to push you outside of your comfort zone. But yes, I will be with you, so you don't have to be afraid. Being a Christian today is tough. It's hard. And if it's not hard, you might ask Jesus, why is this not hard? And what do I need to change in me? Jesus never promised that it would be anything other than hard. In fact, he promised that it would be hard and that we would face trials. In 2024, our theme at Hope City is bear good fruit. And while Jesus used the production of good fruit and bad fruit many times in the New Testament as a metaphor for living attached to him, the anchor text, the text that we have been focusing on for this Bear Good Fruit series, has been in Matthew chapter 7, verses 16 through 20. And it says, you can identify them by their fruit. That is, by the way they act. Can you pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? A good tree produces good fruit, and a bad tree produces bad fruit. A good tree can't produce bad fruit, and a bad tree can't produce good fruit. So every tree that does not produce good fruit is chopped down and thrown into the fire. Yes, just as you can identify a tree by its fruit, so you can identify people by their actions. So you can identify people by their actions. I think that this sermon series has been a pruning series. And if you are a gardener or you know anything about gardens, you know that pruning is a necessary step in having any kind of healthy plant production, right? When you chop off a piece of a plant or a piece of a tree or whatever, it allows new growth to happen. It allows for good fruit production. And Jesus knew exactly what he was doing when he made this metaphor to us about good fruit. As I've talked to people from Hope City over the last few weeks, it's become apparent that many of the people in Hope City are going through seasons of life that they would consider a pruning season, where they really feel like Jesus is just going to town and saying, hey, see that branch? It's not good for you anymore. See that? Get rid of it. And I don't know about you, like, because at first you're like, yeah, that sounds light. That sounds easy. That sounds good. But But when I show you this tool, all of a sudden, it doesn't look like it feels so good anymore. All of a sudden, this doesn't look like, oh yeah, that looks comfortable. That looks like something I want to have happen to me. Yeah, Jesus, go ahead and prune away. As satisfying as it is to do this to a tree, especially like the bigger branches, I'm telling you right now that your bigger branches, the bigger they are, the more uncomfortable this gets. I'm going to leave this right up here for you to look at. And I'm going to point to it several times throughout my message today. Because I think that God is bringing us into a season of pruning. And these bear good fruit messages have been real light and airy up to this point. We've been like, yeah, love, joy, peace, patience, bear good fruit. And now all of a sudden, pruning is part of the process. Now all of a sudden, the process that has been like, oh, bear good fruit, this is going to be good. All of a sudden we look at it and we go, ooh, do I have to? God, really? You want to use that? That doesn't sound fun. I don't want to. And God is saying, if we cut it away, new good fruit is able to grow. Jesus talks about pruning in John chapter 15, verses 1 through 4. He says, I am the true grapevine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit, and he prunes the branches that do bear fruit so they will produce even more. You have already been pruned and purified by the message I have given you. Remain in me, and I will remain in you. For a branch cannot produce fruit if it is severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. In just a minute, we're going to look at our anchor text for today out of Matthew chapter 10. And as I was reading through that, I couldn't help but think of that verse about pruning. I couldn't help but think about this principle of pruning and getting the image of God pruning away the things that are not producing the fruit that he desires. This is what we use to prune. This is painful. This does not feel good. But yet, on the other side of pruning, there's a promise. The promise is in that John chapter 15 verse. It says, he prunes the branches that do bear fruit, so they produce even more. And then later on it says, remain in me and I will remain in you. For the branch cannot produce fruit if it's severed from the vine, and you cannot be fruitful unless you remain in me. The promise there is clear. He prunes the branches so that they will produce even more. If we allow him to prune back things in our life, he is able to multiply our good fruit. As we dive into today's message, I want you to listen and respond with this promise in mind. As God starts highlighting areas that he might want to prune in your life, keep this promise in mind. On the other side of pruning is more growth, new growth, and good fruit. Here's our anchor passage for today, Matthew chapter 10, starting in verse 37. It says, if you love your father or mother more than you love me, you're not worthy of being mine. Or if you love your son or daughter more than me, you're not worthy of being mine. If you refuse to take up your cross and follow me, you're not worthy of being mine. If you cling to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it. Anyone who receives you receives me. And anyone who receives me receives the Father who sent me. If you receive a prophet as one who speaks for God, you will be given the same reward as a prophet. And if you receive righteous people because of their righteousness, you will be given a reward like theirs. And if you give even a cup of cold water to one of the least of my followers, you will surely be rewarded. When Jesus had finished giving these instructions to his 12 disciples, he went out to teach and preach in towns throughout the region. Guys, there's a few principles that in order to bear good fruit, we must implement in our life. And if we're going to implement those principles, if there's going to be room to implement those principles, there's things that have to be cut off. There's things that have to be pruned from our current life in order to make room for the new thing that God is wanting to do in us. The first thing is you need to examine your loves. Verse 37 says, if you love your father or mother more than you love me, you're not worthy of being mine. If you love your son or daughter more than me, you're not worthy of being mine. Here's the truth. It's easy to say, Jesus is number one in my life. He's my number one. He's my first priority. But are you living like that? Will you even wake up a little bit early in order to have one-on-one time with Jesus? When your kids' schedule is busy, or your friends or your spouse want to spend time with you, and that cuts into your time with Jesus, who do you prioritize? What's the first thing that falls off your plate when life gets to be too busy? I'm not in any way suggesting or saying that your kids, your spouse, your friends are not important. They are absolutely important. But Jesus made it clear in this passage that they are not to be your world. They are not to be your everything. I see it all over social media. All of these cute pictures of your kids and your spouse. They're playing out in the sunshine and the caption says, my whole world. Stop it. I hope not. I hope that's not the case. I hope that the people in those pictures are not your whole world. Because if that's your whole world, Jesus is not in it. The number one way you can love your kids, you can love your spouse, you can love your friends, is to point them to Jesus. And the best way to point them to Jesus is to love Jesus more than you love them. To put Jesus in your life before them. That's how we point our people to Jesus. Maybe it's not a person who's your world. Maybe it's a thing. Maybe there's something that's getting all of your time and your priority. Maybe it's the thing that you can't stop talking about. Maybe it's the thing that takes over all of your brain space. Are there loves in your life that are getting priority over Jesus? Because what Jesus has made it clear in this passage is that you have to give up your life. Point number two, if we're going to bear good fruit, we have to be willing to give up our lives. Verse 38 and 39 says this. It says, if you refuse to take up your cross and follow me, you are not worthy of being mine. If you cling to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for me, you will find it. Anyone who receives me, receives you, receives me. And anyone who receives me, receives the Father who sent me. That first sentence there says, if you refuse to take up your cross and follow me. To us, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we don't live in a culture who practices crucifixion. But to the people that Jesus was talking about in this passage, it made perfect sense. Crucifixion was a common practice. And they saw this happening. And what would happen is the person who was going to be crucified had to carry their cross to the place where they were going to be crucified, and there would be crucified on it. And I said earlier that in this statement, Jesus had both immediate context and he had some prophetic tones. Because when we read this, we're like, oh yeah, like Jesus died on a cross, right? We automatically think that. But probably the disciples that he was talking to right now probably didn't make that connection yet. It's still a little early. If you've been following along in our Matthew journey, Jesus hasn't really talked much about the way that he would die yet. And so while it's definitely there, he's definitely hinting toward the way that he would die, it would probably not be until after he resurrected that the disciples would go back and be like, oh, that's what he meant. Oh, Jesus did the very thing that he asked us to do. The message here is that in order to bear good fruit, there are things in this world, not all bad things, but things in this world that Jesus is calling us to prune, to give up, to chop off. When I was really most of my life, from the time I was little all the way up through my freshman year of college, softball was my life. I said all the time when people would talk to me, I'm like, oh, softball is my life. I eat it, I sleep it, I breathe it. Like, it's my whole, it's everything I do. And it was all that I pursued. Like, I had tunnel vision when it came to that. Like, the choosing of my college, the, like, everything that I do surrounded around, like, how does this, how do I prioritize softball in this situation? And the spring of my freshman year of college, I had a phone conversation with none other than our pastor, Paula. And she challenged me with something, which you all know she does. And she's been doing it in my life far longer than she's been doing it in your life. And she said to me, she said, what if God is asking you to give up softball? This was a conversation we were having. There was context there. We were already talking about it. And I remember clear as day my response to her. I'll never forget it. I said, if Jesus is asking me to do that, he's going to have to do something inside of my heart because I don't know who I am without it. And now I look back at that and I'm like, ooh, that's messy. That's gross. But in the moment, I was just being honest. In the moment, I felt that. To the core of who I was, I felt that statement, I don't know who I am without it. Now, Pastor Paula could have very easily said to me, ew, did you hear that? Do you see that that doesn't sound right? But she didn't. Do you know what she said to me? She said, I think you should talk to Jesus about that. She said, why don't you take the next few months? And why don't you ask him that very thing that you just said? Jesus, if you're asking me to give up this thing, will you make my heart ready for it? Will you release me from it? Will you help me to know? Will you make it so clear that this is the thing that you're asking me to do? I said, sure, I'll do that. I can do that. And so I started praying that prayer daily, all the time. I was praying, God, if this is something you're asking me to give up, change my heart, work in me, do something different. And the end of the summer came, toward the end of the summer, and it was decision time. What are we doing next? Where are we going? What are we pursuing? What's our next move? And I remember waking up one morning, and all of a sudden I felt like, I'm good. I don't need it. I will be fine. I think I just want to pursue my education. I want to finish up. And I think my season of softball is over. And I'm sure that when I said that to the people who knew me most, they were floored. I'm certain that they were like, who is this person? Because it was my entire life and I was completely absorbed in it. But to me, I felt a perfect peace in making that decision. And I watched God walk in front of me every step of the way as I walked out that decision. God was so clearly in that path. And he began, as soon as that idol, let's call it what it was, as soon as that idol in my life was removed, God was freed up to do things inside of me and move in ways inside of me that he had not been free to do before because he was not number one in my life before. As soon as God had the green light to prune that area of my life and I started walking with him as the number one, my relationship with him skyrocketed. Now, in that phone call, the beginning of my freshman year, I did not see that that was the end result. I didn't see the new growth. I didn't see the good fruit that God had on the other side of this pruning. All I saw was pain. All I saw was, this is going to be the hardest thing I've ever done. All I saw was, this is going to hurt a lot. All I saw was, this is my whole identity. And on the other side, I can stand and say that the new growth that happened on the other side of that pruning was so worth it. Jesus is asking us to be solely devoted to his mission. And his mission is to love God, to love people, and to make disciples. Anything outside of that, we must be willing to give up for his sake. Now, I'm not saying that everything outside of that you will give up. I'm saying everything outside of that you must be willing to give up, because if you're not willing to give it up, then it's an idol in your life. If you're not willing to give it up, then it has taken the place of Jesus. If Jesus is standing there and saying, I want this, and you're saying, no way, he's not first priority in your life. We must, outside of his mission, we must be willing to hand anything over to him. Up to our very life. And finally, Jesus ends this passage with a call to practice radical generosity. Starting in verse 40, he says, anyone who receives you receives me. And anyone who receives me receives the Father who sent me. If you receive a prophet as one who speaks for God, you will be given the same reward as the prophet. And if you receive righteous people because of their righteousness, you will be given a reward like theirs. And if you give even a cup of cold water to one of the least of my followers, you will surely be rewarded. Bearing good fruit, Jesus says, is to be generous. Good fruit is generosity. To receive others, to be hospitable. In doing so, we are doing it for him. And notice he said, even for the least of one of my followers. What's keeping you from practicing hospitality, generosity to the least of his followers? In Matthew chapter 25, starting in verse 31, Jesus gives a similar call for radical generosity. He says, but when the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, then he will sit upon his glorious throne. All the nations will be gathered in his presence, and he will separate the people as a shepherd separates the lambs, the sheep, from the goats. He will place the sheep at his right and the goats at his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the creation of the world. Get this part. For I was hungry, you fed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me into your home. I was naked, and you gave me clothing. I was sick, and you cared for me. I was in prison, and you visited me. Then these righteous ones will reply, Lord, when did we ever see you hungry and feed you? Or thirsty and give you something to drink? Or a stranger and show you hospitality? Or naked and give you clothing? When did we ever see you sick or in prison and visit you? And the king will say, I tell you the truth. When you did it for one of the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you were doing it for me. I'm going to invite you to stand across this room. What kind of pruning might Jesus be inviting you into? Here's the thing about pruning. Here's the thing about bearing good fruit. Jesus is never going to force you. It's always an invitation. Jesus is always standing there with an invitation saying, I have better for you. I have new growth. I have new life. I have new fruit on the other side of this painful thing. Do you want it? And the easy response is, yes, I want it, I want it. And Jesus says, okay. Jesus, why'd you pick up those pruning shears? Jesus, that doesn't look like it's going to be a whole lot of fun. And he said, I never promised that it would be easy. But I will promise you that on the other side of this is new growth, good fruit. What's the invitation that's sitting before you? It's different for each of you. Jesus might be saying, my invitation is making me the Lord of your life, the number one priority in your life. He might be saying, you have not been living with me as the number one in your life. And today, I'm calling you into relationship with me. Today, I'm saying, I want to be your Lord, your number one. If you want to accept Jesus into your life and allow him the place of number one, and you're saying from today forward, you are in control. Raise your hand. Yeah, 1, 2, 3. That's step one. That's step one. Letting Jesus be the Lord of your life is step one. And as a church family, we want you to know that you're not alone in that decision. And so we're going to pray a prayer together. And everyone's going to say it. Jesus, I need you in charge of my life. I've made a mess. And I know that you're the only one who can clean it up. Forgive me. I give you the number one seat in my life. If you prayed that prayer for the first time or maybe as a rededication prayer after service is over, I want you to go to our next steps in the back of the worship center. We just want to pray with you. Let you know that you're not alone. And for the rest of us in here, the whole time I've been talking, God is tugging on you. There's a thing that God has highlighted in your life that he wants to prune. That he's saying, hey, let's chop this off. Hey, this thing, you don't need it anymore. I want you to rely on me. And if you want to say yes, again, it's an invitation. If you want to say yes to that invitation today, I'm going to ask you to hold your hands up like this. And here's why I'm telling you to do it like this. This is a symbol, right? It's not the first time you've seen this symbol in your life. This symbol means I surrender. This symbol means I give up. It means you got me, right? And that's what we're saying to Jesus this morning. We're saying, I surrender. You got me. My life is yours. Jesus, you see these hands across this place of people who are saying, you have permission to prune in me whatever you want to prune. Get rid of it. The dead things that are not producing in my life, they're yours. The areas where you want to see new growth, chop it off. Jesus, I pray that as we leave this room, our answer will still be yes. That you will continue the work that you're starting in us this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you again for joining us. We want to give a special shout out to those who pour into the mission here at Hope City. If you want to give to what we're doing, you can find us at myhopecity.church/give. Again, we are so excited that you chose to join us, and we hope you have a great rest of your day.